Y'all about ready? Yes. My name is Chris Raymer, recovered alcoholic. We're going to slam through this. Some of these others. Understanding it later this afternoon, we're going to do a little Q&A. So if we don't kind of flesh it out enough for you and you want to ask questions, if y'all write those down, we'll you don't have to hand them to us. Just ask them this afternoon and we can get to that. Y'all have asked some great questions. Real quick, I earlier made a comment about Nancy Reagan. I probably shouldn't have, and I apologize for doing that. I still don't like her, but I apologize for doing it. It was unnecessary. That's what I was talking about last night. I am absolutely capable at 21 years of sobriety of making a complete fool of myself. So there you go. My friend up in Dallas, a buddy of mine, was my first sponsor, as a matter of fact, a guy named Don Smith. He wrote me a deal the other day, and he says, "Whenever a door is closed, another is opened, but it is hell in the hallway." I get that. That's pretty good. And this is one of the reasons that we want to get on with this as quick as possible, to assume that just because you had 18 months to sit and bask in the sunlight of the Spirit before you did the work, assumes that the other guy is going to be able to do the same thing. And, you know, alcoholism, let's all remember that this is progressive in nature, and it progresses differently in different people. I had about a 19-year period where I was in corporate America, and I was what we would call a functioning alcoholic. I wasn't going to jail. I wasn't robbing liquor stores or anything. We sponsor people, have people at our hospital who are like 50 years old, 60 years old, and it's only been in the last few years that they've really developed the symptoms of alcoholism. And on retirement, sometimes it brings it out. And we've got some poor little 18, 19-year-old kids in there that, you know, have drank three times and have three DWIs. Just like it's not a good thing. They never got to enjoy their drinking and drugging like some of us got to. You know, I'm sorry, but as this progresses, we can't tell by looking at you how far it's progressed. So we have to assume that we need to hit this pretty hard. It's like triage. So we got to get you connected spiritually as quick as possible. And that's our only goal, is to get you connected spiritually. Would y'all agree? In the process, we might be able to help you with lots of other stuff, and our friendship may grow. But ultimately, as a sponsor, I've got two responsibilities. I got one, I got to get you connected spiritually, and two, after that, I got to hold you. There's some accountability involved, and that's why if I see you acting goofy in a meeting, I'm going to try to help you get back on track. It's not. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in the 12-step stuff. A program spiritual in nature, folks. We do a third step prayer. We get off our knees. The book says next we launch down on a course of vigorous action. It's the next paragraph after the third step. The vigorous action, of course, is lets the rest of the work. If you've had a first step, the first step tension will propel you on through the work as quick as possible. Some of us find some relief after we do a third step prayer, but that's not the time to sit on our butts. What we want to do now is use the power that we get from that and propel us on through what some consider to be the most difficult part of this program, and that's this little inventory problem. It's difficult because everybody wants to make it complicated. You know, you go into an AA meeting anywhere in the world and say, "I'm working on a four step," and everybody in the whole place just almost in unison, "Oh, you know, it's like, not that." And it's like, if that's your reaction, it could possibly be that you're doing a fourth step incorrectly. A fourth step is a fact-finding mission. It's an inventory. It is not therapy. It is not something where we're going to have to go and relive the past. I get quiet with God. I get up off my knees and I do a third step prayer. And I get up and I get the little notebook and I start making a list of the people, institutions, and principles I'm pissed at. You'll follow? That's as simple as that. And it's like, I say a little prayer. It says, "God, show me who I'm cranky with. Show me who's blocking me." And it's like, this little guy right over here, he may have 20 names on there that he's just livid about it, pissed off. And this guy over here may have 200. Either way, you're doing a good job. You're doing a good job. Just some of us learn to deal with this more than others. Treatment centers are the ones notorious about wanting to drag this on. We want you to work on your treatment, on your fourth step for how much longer you got left? 3 weeks? 3 weeks we want you to work on this fourth step. And it's like, buddy, if it's taking you longer than about 3 days to do this, you really are making a big deal out of nothing. This is just the truth, folks. This is not, I write down all of my life story. I understand, but you're taking it out of context. I don't want to do that because then I can't see the truth. If I'm going to take an inventory of the coffee supplies over here, I don't want to take 2 weeks to do it. I just need to know how much damn coffee and sugar and cream have I got, period. And then it's done. This is what we're trying to do. We make it too complicated. Sit down and make a say, God, show me the people. And I write a list. And I can't think. When the names stop coming, you're done with that part of the inventory. Move on. Y'all follow? No wonder you stay all freaked out working on this fourth. What are you doing? I'm trying to think of the people I'm pissed at. How long are you going to drag this out? And let me tell you this. If you haven't thought of this person in 20 years, you're not pissed at this person. There's some evil bastards out there. But if you haven't given them a second thought in 20 years, why are you even bothering to write them down on this inventory? I want current. I would rather see you guys get current. Get the 10 most wanted out of the way and get recovered from it. There's plenty of time. Do another one. If you think of a bunch more later on down the road, you can do that too. But remember, this is the stuff that's blocking you from the sunlight of the Spirit. So let's get on with it. This idea, fostered in treatment, is a person with the most names is the one that does the most thorough inventory. It's just ridiculous. I'm going to put their little knucklehead's name in the first column. Second column, I'm going to look at why I'm pissed at that person. I'm going to get really specific. If you lie in the second column, you're going to be lost in the fourth column. You follow? You can't base this on any kind of lie. She was never there for me. That's a lie.
Please, slowly, Lord, we have...
That's a lie. Did you get that part? If the truth is, often when I needed her, she wasn't there. You follow? It's a little different. You can't lie. They were the police. It's always on everybody's inventory. They were always against me. Oh, come on. That's so not true. That's just so... Get specific. Second column, third column, we're going to look at how this affected us. Guys, there's the book I can show you in there. We've got forms we can give you. This is thousands of ways to do this. And everybody's got their own little version. Again, I don't care. I've got an 82-page four-step guide on my desk. Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine coming in the shape that some of us came in and somebody drops an 82-page guide down? I just like... I just seem to be dead. It's so simple. I look at the areas of my life that are affected. My self-esteem, my pride, my pocketbook, my sex relations, blah, blah. There's seven areas on the pages. And you list those in the third column. What part of my life is being affected by these little ridiculous resentments? And then I look at the third column. The fourth. You can extend it or whatever. But the fourth column is quite simple. It's my part. My mistakes is the way the book puts it. I'm going to look at three areas, combine them. The fearfulness, dishonesty, and selfishness, what Myers was talking about. And in every area, I've got one or all three of those areas going on. Does that make sense? Some of you that have done many four steps, this all makes it's the ones that haven't accomplished it yet that gets a little confusing. But any resentment that I have, I play a little part in. Everybody thinks that it means that I am responsible for the problem. That's not true. It's just that if I can see a piece, this guy hurt me, and his piece is this big, and for 20 years I've kept it alive, that's my piece. And if I can see my piece, I can get free from it. Make sense? If I remain a victim, I will not stay sober, folks. Victims don't get sober. Victimized people get sober every day. Guys, there's not a person in this room that hasn't been hurt in some form or fashion. And some of you brutally. But if you can see your part in it, you can get past it. And some of you guys, I know that this childhood of origin stuff, you want to get tweaky about that. Buddy, I'm going to just tell you point blank. If you've been trying to deal with this yourself for all of these years, that's your part. Your lack of honesty around it, you're absorbing more responsibility than you needed to, is your part in this deal. And a good sponsor in a fifth step is going to point that out, and we're going to move on. There's no big deals in this fourth and fifth step, folks. I know we make it out to be. Everybody thinks this is about confession in a fifth step. It's not. This is a fact-finding inventory. You'll follow? Confession is a part of it, but if confession was the whole point of this, then the Catholics would all be sober. I mean, we would not have a problem with that. I do a little four-column inventory, resentments. I do a little two-column fear inventory. Simple. List the fear, why you got it. Guys, I've seen eight-column fear inventories. Man, if you've got time to do that, rock on. But I just, the book asked me, what's the fear and why do you think you got it? I do a little sex inventory. Sex inventory's got nothing to do with sex. It's got to do with how I treated the opposite sex. You with me? My relationships with women. How do I treat them? There's areas that we need to look at. Where did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness? You guys think if any one of you women in here did a fifth step, fourth step the way it was supposed to be, I could sit down and listen to your fifth step and never even blush. Because we're not going to talk specifics. We're talking how I treated the opposite sex. And I still do it today as a married man. I still have to look at how I treat women. Make sense? My little offhand comment about your shoes might have been very clever on my part. Might have offended you. And I have to pay attention to watch my little mouth. It always gets me in trouble. Does that make sense? Great boots, by the way. Rock on.
I knew it was coming.
I know, forever the flirt. I don't know, whatever. I got this fourth step, I get it knocked out. When I do a third step with a guy, one of the guys I'm sponsoring, I'm giving these guys, because I am so magnanimous, I'm giving them 1 week. 1 week to finish a fourth step. Because we're not going to mess with this. If you're taking longer than a week, then you obviously don't think you're dying of a fatal illness. You with us? You walked in begging for help. I need to get well now. And now you want 3 months to do a fifth step. I'm a fourth step. It ain't going to happen. Not with me. If you can't get this thing done in a week, it means that you're not feeling the same sense of urgency I'm feeling for you. Make sense? Let's get this thing done. Here's what I always hear afterwards. When I got to AA, I know. Listen, if the guy's sitting in the meeting detoxing, we're going to take it a little slower. If the guy's just a little fried pie, we're going to go a little bit different route. Maybe I have to sit and help him ride it. That's okay too. But in no circumstances are we going to take a long period of time to do this. If you're sitting in this program and you're taking months to do a fourth step, then you have not had a first step experience. You need to go back to first step and get some urgency amongst you, and let's get on down the road with it. We dump, we set some time, and we do a fifth step. Fifth steps historically with me take about 2 to 3 hours. First time through, maybe 3 or 4 hours. You follow? Because we're not going to talk about everything, because I'm not a therapist and I'm not going to comment on everything that you say. I'm there to keep you honest. If you can see your part in the fourth column, we're going to move on to the next. 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 You with us? Same names. You know, faces change. It's the same thing. You do it over and over. You did it with the women. You did it with the jobs. Same stuff. It goes pretty fast and gets me quite comical. Next. Next. And you're just, it's a hoot when you start seeing the truth. Oh my gosh, I'm not a victim. I'm a damn volunteer. And you come out of the experience with a big smile knowing, guys, that's the best news I can tell you. If you think this is about somebody else, we've put the noose around your neck. You know, if I want to get sober, I'm going to look at my stuff and I can get free, because it's all about you and what you're willing to do. You with us? Some of you guys in this room right now are waiting for people to come up out of the grave to apologize to you for bad stuff that's happened. Let me be the first to break this to you. It ain't going to happen. The best news I can give you is, let's just do this together. Y'all with us? That's the bottom line. Myra's going to flesh out some of this other. Well, let me ask you this question. You guys that are sponsoring, you guys and gals that are sponsoring, when the last woman or the last man that asked you to sponsor them, what was the first thing that you thought of when they asked you to sponsor them? I bet you the very first thing that you thought of was, oh crap, there's another 8-hour inventory I'm going to have to do. I bet you did. It's one reason why a lot of us hold sponsorship at some distance, because I think in my head I've got it built up that it's going to be this immense, nasty, I'm just going to have to stay glued to this little cat forever and ever, and it's just going to be ugly. And it's not true. And you'll find as you go through this stuff that you're not doing them any service by doing that, by staying that connected with them. My experience early in AA was just what Chris was talking about, was that my inventories, my own personal inventory, one time took us 7 hours to do. And you know what? When I look back at it, based on what I know now, if your inventories are going that long, what you're doing is letting the guy that you're listening to talk too much about it. What usually happens is he's spending a bunch of time trying to make excuses for all the crap that he did. He's trying to validate all the BS. And it's not necessary. When guys get in there and they want to tell me a 30-minute story about why they got pulled over by the police, I don't stop. I don't care. It's not important here. It has nothing to do with why we're doing this. What I want to know is that do you see and understand why you were pulled over? Uh-huh. Yes. Next. Let's go on. This is not, we don't need to know all the stuff. If we were doing a commercial inventory in a store, the fact that the milk is sour and we can't sell it, that's all we need to know. Milk, sour. Next. I don't need to know why the milk's sour. You understand what I'm saying? It doesn't mean anything to the inventory. And it just takes time. I, like Chris, have got this thing kind of pared down, and as you sponsor more and more men, you'll find out that that they're much more effective. Sitting there for 2 hours of intense conversation with a man as he talks about this stuff is much more rewarding than sitting there through an 8-hour marathon listening to him run his gap and make excuses why he did all that crazy stuff. You see? You'll see. We want to be thorough, but there's a big difference in this stuff. In the States, it's gotten ridiculous how long people are taking to do inventories and stuff. Guys waiting a year to do it. It's a crazy thing. Chris had alluded to it a minute ago. I always think this is kind of funny. We have a spiritual program of action that's guaranteed to send you to a place that you've never been before. You're going to be rocketed into a place you didn't even know existed, but I want you to take a couple of years to get it. I don't understand. That's what we're telegraphing to the guys that were here. There's a spiritual awakening that's waiting for you right there. And we need to get you there as quickly as we possibly can. And we can, most of the time, it's the sponsor standing in the way of the guy. You're motivated. We just need to kind of step back a little bit and let these guys go on and let the momentum of the pain and suffering of this alcoholism shoot them on through this work. It's the coolest thing in the world. If a guy gets up off his knees after doing a third step, like Chris talked about, and wants to wait to do the inventory, let me tell you what's happened. What's happened is that your man or your woman now thinks she has some power. See, lack of power is the dilemma. And this is where we don't want this guy to be. If I make any excuse at all why I don't need to do this inventory right now, right this instant, it's because I think I have some power to make the decision whether or not I will drink or will not drink. And that's a dangerous, dangerous place to be. Draw the analogy back to something physical that scares us. How about cancer? Is there anybody in here, guys, anybody in here that if I told you, if there was a physician sitting right down here, Carlos is a physician, and he's going to say, okay, I hate to tell you guys this, but all of you guys have cancer. Everybody in this room would be devastated, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you be fearful? Wouldn't you be? You bet. And if somebody's told you that already, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And if Carlos said, okay, the course of action is that Monday morning I want you guys at this clinic down there on Elm Street. I want you there at 8 o'clock and we're going to start your chemo. Would there be any of you in here that wouldn't be down there at 8 o'clock? Would there? No! Hell, half of you would be there at 6 a.m. waiting. Open. Come on. There's no way you would put this off. Because you don't trivialize cancer. It's a death sentence for a lot of us. And yet, alcoholism kills more people than all the cancers combined. In all of its manifestations, and our families, and our employer, and everybody that comes in contact with us, they're all affected by it, and yet we trivialize it. Because I'm clear of the booze for 30 days, I'm bulletproof. You see what I'm saying? You see why this stuff is so insidious? Why it's so dangerous for us? Because my mind is going to sell me this idea that I am indeed clear of it and the problem doesn't exist. I can do this later on. No, you can't. So, imagine if you will, you've done this inventory, and you get up and you're a little bit, you're relieved that you got it done. There is some joy in the fact that you've got it done. And you're at a place of sort of an elite little place here because you've managed to do what a lot of people in AA never did, an inventory. We think everybody does them, but the reality worldwide is that most people don't. Most people come, sit, visit, meeting makers make it. They're going to 1,000 meetings, but they're not doing the work. But now you have. And that's a cool place to be. And as we look at this, the book tells us on page 75, it says that we go home and we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. We sit there and we look at this stuff. And they're setting it up. They're kind of setting the stage for step 6 and 7. It's a hugely emotional and hugely reflective time. It's an hour to look at the first 5 proposals. We look at the book and we ask ourselves. And ask yourself the questions, guys. Am I clear about my alcoholism? It's either a uh-huh or an uh-uh. If it's an uh-uh, you're going to call me and we're going to talk about it. So you're going to go, yeah, I'm clear. Step 2 stuff. Is there something out there that can fix this? Yeah. Do I understand what that is? Nope, maybe not yet. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We all want a formed idea, but it's not important yet. What's important is that we're just willing to accept the idea that there's something out there. And then we go through the rest of the stuff and we look at it. If we're there and we're okay, then we can spend the rest of this hour in contemplation and reflection. And then in those steps, they ask us to look at the character defects that we've uncovered. Any of you guys ever go to Sunday school and maybe there's a prayer, maybe you get up in the morning and go, well, God, I just want to be a better man. Sometimes I think I sense God sitting back there scratching his head going, what does that mean, Myers? You want to be a better man. It's this vague kind of nebulous thing. Wouldn't it be better? And I think this is why this AA stuff is so effective in clearing up these areas of our life. Is that now I'm going to God in this hour that I'm spending there in 6 and 7. And I'm going to God and I'm saying, God, I see through this inventory that I am selfish and self-centered. That I am dishonest. That I am arrogant. That I am prideful. That I am defiant. That I am all of these things that we uncovered that we see in this inventory. These are the things specifically that we're asking God to remove. Unless we just like being selfish pricks. I mean, if that's the case, we don't ask for it. I mean, but if you're ready to be done with that, if you're ready, then ask God to remove these things. And He will. And it's the coolest experience. Dr. Bob said that step 6 and 7 was the stuff that separated the men from the boys. And I'm inclined to agree. Sitting in a meeting with those things up on the wall, you know, the little lampshade things, you know, we read that and we think, oh yeah, okay, I did that. We just kind of blow through this stuff. This is where life begins to change in a way that's hugely tangible. And once we're done with that hour, I can tell you this is a personal opinion, this isn't just over the years of observing guys, is that a lot of times over the next 3 or 4 days after you do this inventory and after you do step 6 and 7, there's a period of kind of some confusion in your head. Some guys experience some malaise, kind of a, it's not really depression, it's just kind of a, I don't know. And so I was talking to a guy one time that he said that from a scientific standpoint, that what may be happening is that your body physically is rearranging itself, your mind is rearranging itself, and there's some physical stuff, and he went into some detail. I won't bore you with it because I never really understood it either. But it made sense. It made sense what he was talking about. After a couple of days, most of these guys are like really plugged in and ready to go on with the whole deal. Because what this does is it slides us into 8 and 9, the amends portion of this thing. I've had more questions since I've been here in Sweden. I've had more questions about amends than any other question that there is out there. And we're going to answer some now and we're going to answer some this afternoon, specifically about this stuff. But what I want you to do is look at the contrast between two ways of doing this stuff. If I try to make the amends process, if I approach that process of making a list and then making the amends, and I do it from a point of no power, I've not done inventory, I've not done this work in 6 and 7, it's the craziest thing you've ever done in your whole life. Some of you have done that. Have you ever made an amends and you didn't feel like making the amends and you didn't feel anything and you just walked in and said, well, I'm sorry. Or something equally as goofy. And then the people that you're making the amends to are looking at you going, you sure are. And they just leave. I mean, it's the... And then later you have to go back and clear that stuff up. And so it's interesting. If you'll look at it, some of you guys that have experienced this stuff, to walk up from a powerful 6 and 7 step, knowing that you're filled with stuff that wasn't there before, a new humbleness and a new understanding of my own selfishness and self-centeredness. If we can see that and then walk in and approach somebody more directly like this. Listen, Slick, I know that I treated you shabbily. I know I've treated you with disrespect. You deserve much, much better. Is there anything I can do to make an amends for the way I treated you? Now see how much better that sounds than, well, I'm sorry. I mean, it's just two distinctly different deals. I'm not pointing a finger at this guy at all. Although he played a part in this nightmare that was our relationship. He did. But I'm not there to judge him. I'm simply there to understand that the debacle was created because I'm clear on it now. My problem with this man right here was because of our misunderstanding, was because I was insisting that he do things and see things my way. Based on self, I put myself in a position to be hurt. My insistence that he do things my way is what harmed us. That's the reason we're not friends anymore. And when I can walk in and say, you know what? I'm a selfish, arrogant prick, and I see it. And I don't want to be there anymore. Can you forgive me ever for what I did to you? And he'll go, huh, yeah, yeah. It's a curious thing. Sometimes we look at the amends process as a one-sided deal. I'm clearing up my stuff and I'm going to go make an amends to this man. But we forget that in this same situation, the man that we're going to go see may have been hurting immensely too. He may have been struggling with this thing for years too. And here is an opportunity for God to be in the center of a situation and to heal both sides of that equation. How many of you guys and gals have made amends where you made the amends and then you walked out and you thought maybe you were making amends to a different person because they were different too? You ever experienced that? In your head for years you thought they were a jerk. You thought they were just Satan incarnate. And you hated the idea of going to make the amends to them. And yet when you walked in, instead of seeing this nasty, vile person there, you saw this meek little gentleman that was sitting there like this, and he just kind of looked at you and he said, I'm glad to see you. And you had a nice conversation. And then you walked out. You cannot deny the power and presence of a loving God and experience that kind of experience. You can't do it because there's no other reason for it. There's no other way that kind of damage over the years can heal. Some of you guys, it's like sex. It's like if I tried to explain to you about sex, if I tried to tell you what it was like, I might do a pretty good job of explaining it, but you would never understand until you did it. And then you'd go, oh, that's what that skinny kid was talking about. Now I understand. Well, it's the same kind of thing around this amends deal. I can tell you what it's like, but until you have gone to an amends, in that process and done it with the idea of trying to fix what you did instead of just trying to go make yourself feel better. I'm going to read you a real quick thing here and then I'll let Chris do this. Because we're going to have to move pretty quick through this deal like this. On top of page 77 in our book, at the top of page 77, there's a line here. I'll just read this to you like this. This is talking about the amends process, and it says that we're trying to put our lives in order. And then it says, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. If I have 10 people that I have on my inventory and people that I have harmed, would making an amends to them make me feel better? Of course it would. Of course it would. But for a lot of us, that's the only motivation that we have to make the amends. And the literature doesn't say that. Our book tells us that the real reason that we're making the amends is to what? To fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. If I have a sea of refuse out there, if I have a sea of people that I have stepped on and harmed, and I have not made amends to them, I cannot be effective. I cannot be used by God in a way that's going to be truly effective. I simply must clean it up so that I can stand in full grace of this sunlight of the Spirit, and then I can be effective. And if you've ever experienced it from both sides of this deal, I mean, it's just, there are two reasons to make an amends. One is what I just described, so that we can be clear and we can be okay with the God of our understanding. And the other reason, on a much more tangible level, is so that we're not phonies anymore. We're not hypocrites. You ever know anybody in AA that you know still has unresolved amends that they've never made and never addressed, and they're sitting in meetings pontificating about stuff? They're up there just, you know, preaching and all this other, and you're looking at them like this, and you know they're a phony, and they know they're a phony. Deep down inside, in the middle of the night, looking at the ceiling, they know they're a phony too. And we all live with that. We all. But it's that kind of hypocrisy that makes us ineffective with the new guy. We think we've got the new guy snowed. We think that this brand new guy in here like this, he'll never see through me. He'll see me as a spiritual giant, and that's the way we'll keep that. I got to tell you, these new little guys see everything. They're like kids. If you have any kids at home, they know everything. Mommy and I are fine. Yeah, right. These little bitty kids are going, yeah, right. Yeah, you always yell at each other like that. The new guy knows BS when he hears it, and he knows. It's a damnedest thing you've ever seen in your life. The new guy can spot a phony so fast that it's not even funny. This should be great motivation. If you have unresolved issues of your life, unresolved amends, get straight with it. Come on, man up, grab those old cojones and just go do it and see what happens. You'll be blown away. All right, go ahead. Chris Framer, recovered alcoholic. I say that for the guys on the CD because they think it's the same person talking. I want to make sure, you know, keep it separate.
What a dick.
Big controversy all over the world. Which one's the evil one? Ask ones which one's sober longer. That's what's important. When I do sitting there listening to a fifth step, I got a piece of paper in front of me that looks like this. I've got it divided into two halves. I got character defect on one side, and I've got eighth step on the other. And as you're telling me about your fascinating life, I'm jotting down a few character defects that I sense we might want to look at, and I'm jotting down some people that I think you possibly owe amends to. After it's all said and done and you go get quiet with God, we're going to go to God with this list of character defects and we're going to ask God to remove it. I agree with what Meyer said, and absolutely, this just got, it's two paragraphs in the big book, and I appreciate everybody wanting to. I've seen day-long workshops on 6 and 7. It's like, guys, it's two paragraphs and God's the one that does the work. All I got to do is make the list. I'm not sure how complicated we can make this. It ain't that big of a deal. You'll follow? If I had the power to change myself, I would have done it long before I ended up in dumpsters in Houston, Texas. You know, I needed God's help to do this, and that's what this is about. So I got the list of the amends that I'm going to make, and I sit and I write down little cards. For me, I use cards. You can do it on notebook paper. The people that I owe amends to and their address and their phone number and everything I know about why I'm specifically making amends. Because I don't want to end up like what Meyer said in a situation where I'm trying to make amends to somebody, and I really don't know why I'm making that amend. I just know that we're not okay. That's rubbish. I need to make amends of why. It's like the money I took from you. Yeah. How much? This amount. then I make the best deal I can, how much I can pay back, how much I can't. What I'm trying to do, guys, we can, again, in question and answer later this afternoon, we can get specific about some of this. There's a way to make every damned amend out there. With you and God, you can make every amend there is. There's nothing that you can't make an amend for. Sometimes it's not the direct frontal approach that we would all like to do. I'm trying to clean up the universe. Here's what I'm doing. This is one girl I pissed off. I dated a long time, and I have about 1,000 of these chairs that I'm holding, and I'm dragging this around nonstop with me. And it's like, why are we making such hard going of life? And it's because we're carrying around enough baggage to choke a horse. And what one of the cool things about this program is that we get free of this stuff. And I'm walking around and go over to a new girl's house and, hey, let's go. And she said, well, come on in. And I said, well, I'd like to, but I'm carrying too much baggage to get in your front door. You know, and it's like, it just affects us. And that's what we're trying to do is that every time we make an amend, we set down little pieces of this. I hear people that I sponsor all the time after a period of time of making these amends and setting the universe straight. They go, I can't believe how free I feel. Because you are free. You're not carrying all that stuff around. But guys, we've all made mistakes. But it's about setting the universe straight. Y'all follow what we're going with? We're trying to clean up the wreckage of our past and set the universe straight. And that's all we're trying to do in that 8th and 9th step. 10th step stuff is daily, spot check. On a daily basis, as I just showed you, I can say something really goofy, really stupid. But I'm not going to sit there and wait. Well, I'll do another 4th step in 6 months and clean that up. Sometimes I just need to clean it up right now. How many of you guys have ever been right in the middle of a conversation and then stopped and said, what am I doing? Buddy, I'm sorry. And back out. That's what it's about. Back when I was drinking and drugging, guys, maybe I could get by with some stuff. You know, the spiritual path gets pretty narrow once you get on it. And you just can't do certain things that you used to be able to do. Fuck you. You can't do that anymore. You know, it doesn't mean that we're not going to do it, but you just feel really uncomfortable after you've done it. So, and you feel justified. Well, you shouldn't have said that. I mean, well, I shouldn't have, you know, and you can justify it. But driving home after the meeting, you feel really ridiculous. You want to know why you feel ridiculous? Because you're ridiculous. Stop, turn around, you go back up to the clubs, and you know, and you clean it up. It's like I said, eating crow is not bad, but it's better when you eat it warm. There's nothing worse than cold crow. Don't sit on it. The book says promptly. So you go back and you clean it up, and that's the way you do it. Guys, this prayer and meditation business is just as simple as can be, and it's not an option. Most people in AA, just like Meyer said, do not do prayer and meditation. We do foxhole prayers. Oh, God, save my ass. God, please, you know, skip. But this getting quiet with God, I think I was fascinated this morning when we did that 10-minute meditation. This was an anomaly. A bunch of y'all in here are practicing the discipline of the 11th step. You knew that because you could tell, because ordinarily we do a meditation like this in a group like this, and it's noisier, you know, than everybody's coughing and sniffing and scooting and scratching and just, you know, nobody can sit still. And you guys were like pins. It was obviously y'all have practiced it. There's a lot of people that don't, and it's in the stillness and the quietness that we're going to hear God's word. Everything that we do gets us clear spiritually so that we can hear God's word. Y'all understand it? You want to go to your sponsor and ask your sponsor what to do about your wife. But what the book is clearly trying to tell us is that we're supposed to go to God and ask God what we're supposed to do about our wife. Because the sponsor's going to give you an answer filtered through his experience. What he thinks would be best for you might not be best for you. And that's why we go straight to the key piece. And some of y'all are sitting in here and says, yeah, like God's going to really tell me. You know, in the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12, you're going to experience guidance. And that's a fact, folks. You're going to experience guidance. The book says you will intuitively know how to handle certain situations. Do I stay or do I go? Do I go back to school or do I start the business? Make sense? It's just that simple. What takes place in our lives is pretty phenomenal when we get quiet. But it's a discipline. My sponsor talks about the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12, and that's what it is. You've got to make yourself do that. You'll follow? And as you practice this meditation, you will get better at it. And the longer you can do it, my sponsor in my sponsorship lineage, I've got a guy named Paul Martin, and he says he meditates 45 minutes in the morning and 45 minutes at night. Now, for most of us, that's too dang long. We don't have time to, you know, but if you could try it for 5 minutes at a time and succeed, quiet stillness in 5 minutes, and then set the little timer, practice. What's going to happen is you're going to close your eyes at one particular point, and all of a sudden the timer's going to go off, and you're going to go, shh, damn, where did that 5 minutes go? Where did that 10 minutes go? You follow? And in that stillness, that's where we want to be. You'll be as refreshed as you can be, and it's in that quiet that you will hear God's small, quiet voice. Run, Forrest, run. You know, maybe something like that. Almost there, guys. You can 12 minutes to scratching time. So we're in good shape. Unless you want to smoke right now, and then it's not okay. I don't understand. My wife is a smoker, and I've gotten so used to watching her in a room full of people and watching like this, it's like automatically I know. I've never smoked in my whole life, but I automatically know when somebody's shifting and got that look, and I just like, I'll look at Sarah instead. She can tell me. This stuff that Chris was talking about, this 10, 11, and 12 stuff, these are in some places they call them the lost steps. Because in a lot of groups, they don't exist. In a lot of places, we don't talk about them, and we certainly don't do them. And yet, everything that you did in this work was about that, about getting you geared up for what you would be doing in 10, 11, and 12. The juju, the stuff inside that you've always wanted all comes from 10, 11, and 12 and the discipline of working those three steps. If I'm working with older guys and their life has gotten stale, you ever know guys like that? You've ever experienced that where you've gotten flat in AA? We call it being AA slick. You know the lingo, you know the stuff, but you're just kind of bored with the whole damn thing. I promise you, my experience has been is that if this is true in your life, that it is all about your efforts in 10, 11, and 12 or your lack of effort in 10, 11, and 12. And mostly 11 and 12. This deal of prayer and meditation. Dr. Bob didn't write a whole lot of stuff in AA. There's not a whole lot of stuff that's there. But what is there, most of it was around step 11. Because he was hugely aware of how foreign the idea of a connection with God was. We're used to it from a religious context of going to church and doing this other kind of stuff. But a true and real relationship with a God of your understanding, again, that you may not even know and understand now, This was huge stuff, and Bob wrote a lot about it. There was a thing that he wrote one time that said, you know, there's a lot of things in AA that you can get by without. You might skirt around certain areas, but prayer and quiet time, as they called it, is not one of them. It was mandatory. You simply had to do it. There's a line in the book on page 164. There's this little line in there that says, God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Remember that line? We read it a lot at the end of a lot of our meetings. God will constantly... If God's constantly disclosing things to us, and I think that Bill and those guys meant it literally. I think that God is indeed constantly disclosing things that we need to know and understand. And yet we don't hear it because we're too busy running our yap. We're too busy praying and telling God what He needs to be doing and this kind of stuff. There's this thing about just shutting up. Just be quiet and enjoy the stillness. And for a lot of us, that stillness is very, very, very uncomfortable. Because we've trained ourselves, guys, from the time that we are little bitty guys, we've trained ourselves to be busy. We don't want to be sitting. I'm not going to be caught sitting on my rear. I'm going to get out there and move. And everything in our life is about that. And so the most unnatural place, if any of you guys have ever practiced meditation in its disciplined form through yoga or through whatever, one of the things that you find out first, one of the things that you see is this, how uncomfortable it is to simply sit still. It's the most unnatural place for us to be. And your head's running 10 million miles an hour, and there's all kinds of squirrel cage shit going up there, and everybody's telling you things like this, and I just... You know it. You know it. And let me give you a piece of hope here. I doubt if there's anybody here that had more voices in their head than I did when I got here. I have Somebody said one time, I can't remember who it was, that I had a Grand Central Station head, and every time a train comes in, I feel like I got to get on it. I feel like I got to go on that ride, and I can't stay focused on anything. Today they'd call it ADD. I just got this whacked head, and so in the beginning, sitting still. Let me tell you something: a 2 minute meditation, guys, rock on. Rock on. If you could sit still for 2 minutes, terrific, do it. In a week, you'll be going 5 minutes. In a week from there, you'll be doing 10 minutes. And I guarantee you, the first time you sit still and get in that meditative place for 10 or 15 minutes, you'll get up going, yeah, yeah. It's the coolest thing in the world, because we're retraining our body to do something foreign, like be quiet. You see? And so as you get on through this thing, and as you begin to build some time in this, you'll begin to understand this quiet, still voice. It may not be God saying, hey, hey, dummy, do this. It may not be quite that plain. But as you begin to do something, you'll hear this voice go, no, not that, dummy. And you'll go, okay. And you'll back away. You'll be directed through the day. You'll say, God sent me this perfect woman. Sexually, you're thinking, this is the coolest thing in the whole wide world. But there's this quiet, still voice going, she's Satan incarnate. Listen to the quiet, still voice. Listen. Because I'm guaranteeing you, the voice is telling you the truth. And most of us, guys, don't you know it? Most of us ignore the quiet, still voice and just look at those bitchin' legs. We do. And there's where the drama starts. You see? How do I know this? Well, those bitchin' legs got me too. I understand that. It just... But all of this stuff brings us to a point collectively where we can get geared up to do step 12 stuff, which is what, if there was a secret handshake, 6 minutes and we're done. If there is a secret handshake in AA, it's that. It's the 12th step. It's this. The 12th step, as it was set, was not set up as a, if you feel like it, this is what you do. It was set up as a, this is what we're all supposed to do. You see, today we ought to be surprised when people are not doing it. And we're not. I sponsor 5 guys right now in this scenario. This is just an example. I sponsor 5 men who've all been sober more than 17 years. Some of them 20, one of them 26 years. And collectively, they have way over 100 years of sobriety. Collectively. Now, out of those 5 men, collectively, they've sponsored 5 men. One guy hadn't sponsored anybody. One guy sponsored 2. One guy, and when I've made the connection one day and realized this, I'm just sitting there going, no wonder you're a fruitcake. No wonder. This is from the title page to page 164. They talked about service to others. They talked about what we can do to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God. And then they spent a whole chapter, chapter 7, working with others, that told us about what we were supposed to do once we were plugged into that power. And we make it as an option, that it's something that you can do if you feel like it. Well, let me suggest from my personal experience, you'll never feel like it. Because if you're uncomfortable at all with the idea of helping somebody, you're always going to come up with an excuse why you don't want to do it. I'm too busy. I've got kids. I've got a husband. I've got a job. I've got this. I've got my health deal I'm dealing with. You'll come up with 1,000. I'm too stupid. I'm too slow. I love those excuses. There was a man when I was about 6 months sober that talked from a podium in front of a group like this, and I was sitting out there, and he said, you know, there are good 12-steppers and there's bad 12-steppers. And if you're not a good 12-stepper, you ought to leave it to the people that know what they're doing. Guys, I could have kissed that man. He was my savior, because he took away every piece of responsibility to get out there and help somebody. I didn't have to do it, because I'm sitting there 6 months sober going, I'm a loser as a drunk and I'm a loser now. And I'll never be able to help anybody. Ever. You see? And it's so wonder that so many of us sell ourselves that idea. Sometimes it's not that dramatic. Sometimes it's very subtle and it happens over a period of time. And it manifests itself in our inaction. You may not have told yourself that you're a loser and you can't help anybody, but your actions, by not helping somebody, said exactly what that is. You simply have made an excuse why you can't be out there. On page 132, there's this little line that said that we've recovered and been given the power to help others. Left on my own devices, I'm a busted up drunk who has no ability to help anybody. And yet the moment I get Myers-Raymer out of the way, and I'm looking at a guy going, there he is, new meat, let's go get him. And we go in there like this, and we get him all gathered up and get him excited about recovery. Guys, the moment I get myself and my own intellectual arrogance out of the way and address what I can do today for the man who still suffers, miraculous things happen. Amazing things happen. You guys that know already what I'm talking about, you ever walk away from working with another drunk and you go, where in the hell did all that stuff come from? It's just like, where did it come from? All of a sudden you're a fountain of knowledge and before you wouldn't have been able to do anything. But God through you is able to save and change and affect lives in ways that we will never understand. And I can assure you of one thing. That the first time that you walk into an AA meeting and you notice one of the guys that you sponsor working with a new guy. I walked into a meeting one night after I'd been involved with these guys and I'd been sponsoring for some period of time and I walked around the corner. And it's like 2 hours before our meeting starts, and it takes a while to set up a meeting for 200 people. It's a big, big meeting. And I as I walk around the corner, my guy that I'm sponsoring was sitting knee to knee with another little busted up guy that's about 19 years old, and they both are sitting knees touching, big books on each knee, talking about big book stuff. And I just kind of went and just kind of back out of the doorway. So I'm just around the corner listening, like some pervert. But I'm listening. Some character defects just stay with us. I just can't help it. So, I'm listening to what this guy is saying. And I cannot believe it. And he's doing an absolutely flawless description of the alcoholic. They talk a bit about God. And then all of a sudden I hear this quietness. And I look around the corner and they're on their knees. And I backed up like this and I'm standing in the doorway and I'm just weeping like a kid. I'm just like, but for the first time in all of the years I was involved in AA, I finally understood what it was like to be a part of something much, much bigger than me. Much bigger than me. I was a part of something that could change and affect lives so far downrange. I have a clear-cut message that can change everything about your life. That can change everything. Not just the booze, not just the drugs, not just that stuff. But everything. How you perceive your wife, how you perceive your work, how you perceive life in general. Wouldn't it be cool just to be able to get up every morning excited about what you can do today? To get up every day excited about how cool it would be to affect lives on a cellular level? It may not mean squat to you. But for a busted up drunk from Texas who left on his own devices was totally useless. I am clear what my primary purpose is. My primary purpose is to carry as clear a message of recovery to as many drunks as I can before I breathe my last breath on God's green earth. And as a result, God has changed everything in my life. And I get to see some cool people and I get to meet some cool... My life today, guys, is as rich as any man's life could be. And I get to go home to Texas tonight to a woman that I absolutely adore. I cannot wait to be in the same room with that woman. I cannot wait to be at work. I cannot wait to see the people I know in AA. And I want more than anything for you guys to feel that, to experience that. If there's ever anything we can do to help you, you let me know, okay? Thank you.